Hey, what's going on, Destiny? I hear a lot about like Trump suspending elections and stuff like that. Do you think there's a possibility, like if Iran continues on like the war in general, that maybe potentially the elections could be suspended, at least the midterms?
I mean, it shouldn't be, but I mean, like, it's all going to come down to the SAVE Act and what he's going to try to do with ICE or whatever. But I mean, theoretically, that shouldn't happen. I don't know what I'm gonna say. I mean, like, yeah, he wants to. He definitely wants to. But there's a huge issue with the lack of institutional strength the current admin has because they're so good.
I don't know. Like, it was just like a thought because it seems like all these steps are put into place for a specific reason and some kind of result. I don't know if that's like some kind of conspiratorial like thought process there.
Well, no,
But
it's not conspiratorial. I mean, they've literally said this is
we're talking months from now.
Yeah, they've said
So
they literally
how could
said
that
that
even be
this
like?
is what Trump wants to do. It doesn't matter if he's going to do it, right? But I don't think that they have the institutional knowledge to do it. That's why I don't think they'll be able to. That's my
I've
perspective.
got an interesting question off this, and I will pause your time. Do you think the SAVE Act would actually hurt Republicans more than Democrats this election?
It's like possible, but it would be such a hard thing to predict.
Yeah, I do kinda. I agree it's hard to predict, almost impossible probably. Here's my
Because
reason why
you
I think
could
it
make the
could.
argument that like Democrats are going to be so motivated
Super
to
motivated,
vote that no matter what you do to try to stop them, they're going to show up to vote anyway. But
Yes.
that any kind of like demotivating thing for Republicans, the Republicans are already ultra demotivated for a
They're just
variety
gonna be
of
like, fuck
reasons.
it.
Yeah. Also, one thing, because there was research on this a long time ago, 4 or 8 years ago, I don't remember which election I was reading about. But like, if somebody wants to vote, it's actually really hard to discourage a person from voting unless you obscure it. That like people are generally willing to go to a polling place and wait for 6 hours, even if the line is long. That doesn't turn a lot of people away. The stuff that turned people away would be if you like remove them from a voter roll and they weren't aware of it, and then they like miss they don't they miss the time to register because some places you can't register same day, and if you don't
But that
register.
only turns them away because they have no ability to
Yeah,
vote
that's why I
at
said
that
with
point.
obscured. Yeah. So if you obscure it, but if you're just trying to throw a barriers and people see them like that, if they really want to vote, they will. If they want to vote, they'll still vote, generally speaking. Yeah. So, but
They
I don't know,
will.
it's possible. Yeah.
They'll bitch about it, but yeah. All right, sorry, your time's back. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, my bad. Yeah, so I have like one other question, and this won't take too much of your time, hopefully. So this kind of ties into the political landscape thing too. I'll be honest. I watch a lot of different things. I've watched your show for like a long time, so I also watch a little bit. I'm not full on in with like the Zionist control the entire world bit. I understand it. Like it makes sense in my head in some types of ways. So like obviously like I'll listen to Nick Fuentes on occasion or like Sean Ryan, and it seems to be like popping up a little bit more and more recently, like some kind of blame for whatever's going on, and like, oh, Iran, the Jews and Israel and all these different things. And in my head, I'm like, well, if this all backfires, and let's say, God forbid, we fail in whatever like terms during this special operation, quote unquote, who's to blame? Like who are the Republicans or the who is the US going to blame? Are they going to blame Trump, or are they going to tie that into the Jews in America and Israel, and now we got to round them up? It's like fucking Nazi Germany or some shit. Like does that make any kind of sense, or is that just kind of like conspiratorial a little bit?
In terms of like, could we take a hard bend towards like anti-Semitism?
Well, not even so much that. Just I'm thinking like a couple years in the future, right? Like, let's say all this goes and we're talking the next political environment, and people are thinking, okay, we're going towards the totalitarian state, and Trump is going to suspend elections, and whoever's going to take over is going to be worse than him in some type of way or something like that. Who are the people that they're going to scapegoat to? Are they going to scapegoat to the Jews, like the alt-right or whoever it might be that's in power, God forbid?
Yeah, I
Who are
have
they
no
going to
idea.
blame?
It's hard to say. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's like it's like impossible, I think, to predict that. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Because I mean, like,
I don't know.
if we look at like the past like year and a half, how many people have they tried to scapegoat, right? We got Venezuelans bringing fent. We've got Canadians not securing the northern border. We had Haitians eating dogs. We had Muslims in general. We had Islamic extremism from Mamdani. We had pro-Palestinian Hamas terrorists that were against Israel protesting on college campuses. We've had Somali people from Minnesota. They've tried to scapegoat. Like, they were jumping from group to group to group to group to group, like in an insane pace. So, Yeah,
without taking accountability, right? Like, so, like, who is really ultimately to blame? It would obviously be the president and whoever's his handlers, or if he has any handlers, who is he listening to, and so on and so forth, right?
Who do we have to blame? Oh, like, who should we blame?
Yeah, who should we blame? Obviously, you should blame the person that's in charge.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I would say that for sure. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. For whatever reason, that's the main reason that I kind of called. And I just wanted to pick your brain a little bit. Obviously, you got like a lot of resources and you put a lot of time into this. I didn't really put too much effort into this, I'm going to be honest.
I was actually in military intelligence for 7 years, just recently exited it. One of my biggest concerns right now with the military is...
What branch?
I don't know if I want to say that.
Wow. Okay. All right, go ahead.
Marine Corps. Sorry. Marine Corps.
Thank you.
Oh, actually, that provides some context.
Good.
So one of the biggest like concerns that I have right now, not majorly with intelligence, but a lot with the military, is it seems like there is a lot of extremism in the military right now.
Wait, I'm so sorry. Hold on. Are you in the military right now or are you retired? Sorry.
No, I just got out, which basically means that the shackles are off and okay. I can say whatever the fuck I want.
And when you say just got out, do you mean like a year ago, a month ago?
Try 5 days ago.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, cool. Okay, go on.
Yeah, so the amount of extremism, specifically surrounding things like when Marines went to the LA protests, the amount of Marines talking about, like, comparing that to the Rodney King riots was crazy. The amount of Marines that I heard specifically talking about the excitement at the idea of killing American citizens because they disagreed with them was crazy. And this is all like firsthand account. This isn't like I was scrolling through Reddit and I saw Marines talking about it. Like, this is firsthand account. I guess my question is just, what is your solution for that? Like, how do you de-radicalize a community that is largely conservative to begin with?
Can you tell me how old you are and how long you were in the military? Just curious.
So I was in the military. Also, sorry if you hear my daughter in the background. She's like sitting on my lap right now. But
yikes, bro, TMI.
I was in the military for 7 years. I'm about to turn 25.
Gotcha. I mean, what do I think about it? I think it's bad. What are you going to do about it? Who knows? You said you were in for 7 years. It's interesting you say that. I've said this before on stream. And one thing I think you need to tell her to let me finish my statement.
I'm going
to
mute when I'm not talking so that she's not babbling over you.
Why don't you tell her to have some manners? How old is she?
She's a year and a half old.
Okay, then she should absolutely have manners. No, I'm just messing with you.
Sorry. She's an asshole.
No, it's okay. So one thing that I've heard a lot from people is, especially before the Biden admin, like back in like 2020, like people from the military would email me all the time. And they would say that basically emailing from the military or from just working in government, so intelligence or just normal non-intelligent, whatever work, non-intelligent, like work outside of intelligence in the government. And people would tell me that all of these jobs are generally like very apolitical. People don't talk politics. There's not like this rampant extremism through all the military or through intelligence or whatever like people would expect. That basically it's kind of like a taboo to talk about politics when you go to the job. But I have heard over the last like year and a half, 2 years, that culture, a lot of people are telling me, has like changed significantly, such that there are like unironic, I don't remember if I said this the last time a guy emailed me, I think he was in the CIA or it might have been FBI, but like he was telling me that like people on the job were like legitimately conspiracy theorists, that the amount of political talk and the amount of just kind of like insane has gotten substantially worse, like in ways that they'd never seen historically. I know you said you've only been in for 7 years, but do you feel like that's true, or do you feel like it's always been like people are kind of like radical, have always said like crazy stuff, and it's just gotten a little bit worse? Or do you think it's changed significantly over the past like year and a half?
So I got in 2019, so I was in for like the tail end of the first Trump admin. And I would say even then, it wasn't nearly as bad as it was now. So during the Biden admin, it was like largely really boring, to be honest. Like the intelligence community, super nonpartisan, like nobody really talked about politics.
Yeah, like I remember like, asking friends who worked in intelligence, like, oh, like do you think your office is like in generally like more Republican or Democrat? And they would tell me that they legitimately didn't know, which almost seemed like a lie to me. I almost wonder, but they say, like, I don't even know the politics of like half my coworkers. You know, they might have like one or two friends, but they like wouldn't just talk about it that much. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I would say that generally, it's pretty apparent that most people in the Marine Corps at least lean right. And I guess it kind of depends on maybe what state you're in or what state they came from. But I would say the majority of people that I came across in the Marine Corps, when I started, they were like the reasonable side of the right. They probably leaned a little bit more center than they did anything else. But they were still what was left of the reasonable side. Mm-hmm. And now I've seen a lot of that just disappear. And it's not reasonable anymore. There is no such thing as a reasonable side of the right in the military. You either agree with Donald Trump and everything he's saying and everything he's doing, and you're like this major conspiracy theorist, and you're twisting your words during your intelligence briefings to make it sound exactly like what you think everyone else would want, or nobody listens to you. And the crazy thing is, we actually had like commanders talking to us being like, hey, we just have to do what we have to do. It doesn't matter if I agree with this, and it doesn't matter if you agree with this, but we just need to like do what we're told, all right? Which was like really hard for me to listen to sometimes, because it was obvious that some of these commanders didn't agree with the things that were happening. Like, obviously I can't go into exact details or anything on what we were given, mm-hmm. but it just got really weird there towards the end. And I was really glad that I got out when I did.
Yeah, this is kind of worrying to me, because I've said this before when it comes to lawmakers on the right, but it seems like it's infecting every part of the government, especially in this term, that like people will say kind of crazy shit in front of the cameras, especially like elected lawmakers, but like when it comes time to get behind closed doors and to actually do the work, everybody's kind of on the same page, like they got a job to do. But it really seems like that is changing quite a bit, that there are legitimately a lot of crazy and unhinged and conspiratorial minded people who are having to feed information up in a way that is like reinforcing kind of this weird conspiratorial slash hard MAGA bend everywhere, or else you run the risk of either getting fired or like nobody wants to talk to you or listen to you, or I don't know. That's really scary to me. Like you don't have to give an opinion, I don't know if you have an opinion, but like the whole like Kash Patel, like people going through the FBI and just firing anybody that had worked on any prior like investigation into Trump, or you know, getting rid of prosecutors or whatever that we're in cases involving Trump. Like, I don't know, that stuff is more concerning to me than crazy people at the top, because those people switch out really easily. But if your institution starts to rot from the inside, that's like, I don't even know if you can fix that. Yeah,
I honestly don't know what the way forward is. Mm-hmm. I can make comments and like opinions on broad things now, because I can't get in trouble anymore. I'm not getting retirement benefits, so they can't touch me any way you look at it, right? But generally the idea that people in like intelligence disciplines have to worry about their partisanship now, that is a really scary thing to think about, because you've got people like Kash Patel, like you said, and people like Tulsi Gabbard, the literal DNI right now, she has to mince her words on whether or not Iran was actually a threat before we went there. Because if she says it in a certain way where she agrees that they were a threat, it looks really bad on her. But if she doesn't say it in a way that she thinks that the administration thought it was a threat and they just did it anyway, then she's going to get axed, right? Like, she's in an impossible situation, whether or not she's actually saying the things that she believes or not, or she believes anything that's happening, she's in an impossible situation.
Sure.
So yeah, generally I would just say like I said, coming in and the 4 years during Biden, like partisanship was like known. People knew what it was, but nobody was really arguing about it. It was this last year and a half where arguments about politics and arguments about things that were happening became like a commonplace in the workplace. Mm-hmm. That wasn't something, and the idea that my entire 4 years under Biden that we didn't have to have a single talk about like, hey, we need to like stop talking about this, or hey, we just need to do what we need to do, like that was never a conversation we had to have when Biden was in office, because there wasn't anything that divisive that Biden did or said that caused us to have to dial that kind of stuff back. But it feels like we had that talk at least once a month. It's like Venezuela happened. It's like, all right, everybody shut the fuck up. Nobody like can give their opinion on Venezuela. And then like Iran happened and everyone was like, all right, shut the fuck up. The LA riots, everyone shut the fuck up. Just do what you're told. And the idea that
getting in trouble by like upper command.
Well, no, it was like you either it didn't really matter. Like on social media, we all signed this thing called a page 11 where you can't talk about partisan things on social media. Mm-hmm. But for the first time ever, I was told you can't attend a protest outside of uniform without representing the military. So the idea that any of the No Kings protests, those were off limits. And they were all like talked about in this way where it was going to be like this super dangerous thing where if you went to it, like you could have died. That was something that I'd never heard during 4 years of Biden. And the idea that we had to have talks like this like once a month was just insane to me. Where it was like there was a new major thing happening in the world that we couldn't talk about. Obviously, we couldn't post about it on social media because we agreed to that when we all came in. That you can't.
Oh,
is a direct representation of
of
the military. But the idea that we had to have that talk so often was just, it was insane.
Yeah. Well, damn, not good.
I feel like there was one other thing that I had to ask.
You got time.
I'm trying to remember what that was now. Dan's super quiet. Anyway, man, I can't remember what it was now. I appreciate you guys taking the time though.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks for coming in.
Yep. Have a good one, guys.
No problem.
I wanted to devil's advocate David Frum's argument for the Iran war on the Bulwark. They're all anti-Trump, but you know, he was making the neocon case for Destiny to react to.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, the case he made was the Israeli intelligence was such that there was a unique opportunity to decapitate most of the Iranian regime in a way that it wouldn't sort of come back around in a while. That is what convinced sort of the greater American state apparatus that, you know, they've been thinking about the war for Iran for a long time, even if Donald Trump hasn't considered all the details, right? So that's what convinced them to also go in for it, and that there's a decent chance it might end up working out because of those things, that there might have been solid intelligence behind it, or actually Frum is asserting that there was, based on like sort of his reporting, right? So that's the argument that was being pushed forward. And I mean, yeah, you don't have to defend the position that Trump knew about it beforehand, but that this could be sort of the American state's goal and it could work out. So, yeah.
Well, when you say work out, I mean, like, I think we can defeat the Iranian regime. That was never a question, I think, right?
Yes. I meant more in, okay, when I say work out here, I meant like it'll work out politically for them in the end, right? In a way that like this mission could be successful to the point where it all works out politically, which I think at least in our, the lib side of it, we're taking sort of as fiat accompli that it won't, that this will. And maybe that's just like, you know,
anything could work out well politically, but I mean, like, will it? I mean, it could also go really bad. And it seems like the shot caller on that right now seems to be exclusively Israel.
Yes, but and this is the argument that Frum is making, right? That it is that there is some competent planning going on behind, say, at least the operational bits, things like the taking off the Karg Island and whatnot, all of it. Yeah. I'm not articulating it well.
Why do I feel like, or what would lead me to believe there's some competent planning going on behind things?
In that this is what the Pentagon has been, like, the specific things they're doing, right? The targets they're striking, the way they're striking them. These are the things that they've been planning for the last 40 odd years, essentially, right? The reporting also talks about, right, like that this is something that the Biden admin, the Obama admin, Bush, like Netanyahu's asked for an American to go along with this for a long time, right? This is, so there is, you do have the sort of the Pentagon planning for how this will play out there. It exists. Presumably the government is capable of following it through as well.
Well, I mean, like, right? Yeah, but when you say planning, like planning in terms of like, are we able to execute on our ability to regime change? Yeah, I think that's certainly going to be the case. I just don't know if we're ready for all of the potential fallout from...
You know, but a successful regime change would be the win, right? That's the... Because
like,
for
when
you
say the DOD and everybody else have been planning out attacks and everything, sure. But like, does that mean that we... like, does that include the planning of like what comes next, or what government's going to be there next, or how other regional actors are going to respond, or like what else is going on in the world? Like, when you say this has been planned for 40 years, like there wasn't a Russia-Ukraine war 40 years ago, or the whole October 7th stuff hadn't happened 40 years ago, and the relationship between some of the Middle East wasn't... like, China wasn't as involved as they are now in the Middle East. Like, I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say it's 100% going to be horrible and it's completely f***ed and nothing good is going to happen. I'm sure... it could be the case that in the end, somehow everybody pulls through and it's just better for at least everybody in the West. But I mean, like, it's a big risk that I don't trust this administration to competently make. And I also wouldn't rely on any plans that were made decades ago, because I think the current admin is obsessed with throwing away all the old, all of the institutional knowledge and everything they have. Also, I'm not even fully convinced. I don't know why I would even believe that any of that old guard is applied now, because we have people like Tulsi Gabbard saying that the intelligence community basically hadn't, it wasn't like, well, I don't know, didn't seem like they had a lot of support for the current attacks anyway, but I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll see.
Right. 20 yeah. seconds left. Najima, go ahead.
That's it. The other thing I had is a separatist topic, which would be more than 20 seconds. All right.
Thank you, Najima. Thanks. Have a good one.
You guys too.
Strophium.
Oh, hey, sorry. I got one question. I kind of want to rehash the Tulsi Gabbard thing. So you kind of swayed me with your argument yesterday, but one thing I'm curious about is that she wouldn't outright, like you said, she kind of like, she put it on Trump at the end, but the way she did it, it seems kind of like she got the worst of both worlds. Like she kind of looked bad in front of Congress as well as threw Trump under the bus. Is there like a strategic reason for that? Because I feel like if she went hard in condemning Trump, she would lose her job, but she would save her career.
I don't know if she would have a career to save.
Yeah, maybe not. But it just seems like she chose like the net worst option.
Well,
maybe
I mean, like, why can't we just view that she did what she thought was right here? I just don't know what, like, knowing what I know of Tulsi Gabbard and her positions, like, it seems like, why do we have to have some weird conspiracy to explain? Or I guess, what do you think? What is your suggestion for what do you think she was saying or what was going on?
Well, the impression that I got, and I think the impression that a lot of people at the hearing got, was that she was going out of her way to not say that Trump acted in a way that was counter to the intelligence.
She was, I think in order to say that, I think you just had to not listen to the thing. Like, I think
she said it in so many words, but
she was literally saying, like, what, in the very beginning of Ossoff's line of questioning, like, Ossoff asked, did you obliterate Iran's nuclear capabilities? Yes. Like, were they, like, these were very clear, concise, direct answers to all of these questions. And then she refused to say ever. She never gave the answer that the intelligence community, like, said there was some imminent threat from Iran. Like, she'd said that. And then she even went, and then the fact that she even said that Israel and the U.S. have different goals in this war.
That was crazy.
I mean, it feels like that's a lot. I don't know how much more you want other than her coming out and literally saying, Trump, he did this shit on his own.
I don't think I've ever seen a world leader or not a leader in the administration ever answer that way of like, yeah, the person that we're going, like, we're in a war with have completely different goals.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I just said about as much as
I guess
you know.
Maybe I got to watch the whole thing again. But like the thing that is just weird to me is why would she go up to that point, like to the precipice, and not say, yeah, we told him there was no threat, no imminent threat. And he did it anyway.
Well, she said that, though, right?
In so many words, yeah.
She said that the whether or not it's an imminent threat or whatever is solely up to the president to determine. So that's her explicitly saying that they didn't make that determination.
Sure, I guess.
Well, it is.
Maybe this is my autism. I feel like there's
explicitly saying they did not make that determination, right? And the president made that determination on his own without the IC.
But the Weasley portion is that it is her job to make that determination.
Of course it is, but everybody knows that, right? Of course they all know that, which I think is stronger proof that, like, well, yeah, the president must have, whatever, for whatever reason, on his own decided this. Yeah,
isn't she kind of herself in that regard, where she, at best, she's coming across like she doesn't understand her own job?
Well, she kept trying to go back to the thing where she says that she's going to keep her own opinion out of it, that apparently she said when she got confirmed.
Well, her political opinions, but yeah.
Okay, so, okay, maybe this is my autism. So you're saying that, like, her presentation of it unbiased is she's trying to eliminate any language that might include her frustration with the situation.
Maybe.
Yeah. I can get behind that, yeah. Where she's trying to not, like, poison the well of, like, feeling like she was coming at it with, like, the perspective of Trump being the enemy. So trying to let, like, the facts stand on their own. But maybe there's no good way to say it. Maybe I would be complaining about it either way. I don't know.
Yeah, because I feel like if she explicitly came out and said, this was all Trump, we didn't do any of this, then everybody would be like, oh, she's just trying to save her own
skin. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
It's a tough spot, actually. Okay.
I think I originally came away with what you came away with, Strophium, but then I did rewatch it with Steve, I guess, a little bit. And
yeah.
I do feel when you watch it again, she is condemning the administration a lot more than it originally felt like. And it's a really weird one that I think you have to rewatch, because I don't think I've ever seen anyone condemn the administration.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because now that I'm replaying it and I'm trying to, like, substitute things that she could say, there's always going to be some kind of spin. She get kind of put in a position.
Also, I don't think I have especially good media, whatever, because I don't watch as much as a lot of the other mainstream commenters do. I probably watch quite a bit less. And I don't know if I've heard any other person give the takes that I'm giving. So I could be wrong. I would hedge against it that way, because it's not like I would have some special insight. I just feel like the statement she made were crazy to me. But I don't know. Maybe somebody else has, and I just haven't seen it. But yeah.
I'm going to rewatch, and I'll let you know if I still come up with the same opinion, but I think you might have swayed me.
Good, I guess.
Anything
That's
else?
All.
You got at least 3 minutes.
Oh.
No, I'm good. Cool. I yield.
You'll yield your time. Good.
Yeah. All right, peace out.
Have a good one.
How interested are you in, like, actually learning how, like, healthcare and healthcare claims work? Because every time I'm on, there's, like, a crazy amount of misinformation.
God damn it. I'm wasting 2 potions on this because of you. What do you want to say?
No, it's just like whenever anyone comes in, like, they always say, like, like, they don't know what a procedure code is. They don't know, like, what a diagnosis code is, how those things affect, like, how you get billed out or how those things are even, like, structured.
Are you a pharmacist guy or a doctor or an insurance guy or what?
I'm a data engineer for healthcare companies. So data goes through data.
I'm just fucking, sorry.
Yeah, no, okay. You're good.
Go ahead.
So, like, you'll have someone come through, like, the whole structure is, like, you'll have an insurance company that makes a, like a contract with a hospital. And all of the things that you go into the hospital for is already determined and prepaid based on, like, what they can do and what they can't do, based on, like, your procedure codes and what your diagnosis codes and stuff are. Wow. So, like, when you go into the hospital, let's say you're going in for, like, some sort of cancer, and the doctor goes, okay, you're overweight, you have this sort of cancer, and how they bill it out, there's already, like, a set script for how they're going to treat you.
Yeah, so this is like standard. What the standard of care is probably going to be what the insurance company roughly covers. Yeah. There's probably going to be all things that will change based on age and patient history and all that. That's all, like,
based on that.
Yeah,
exactly. And all of that stuff kind of gets, like, rolled up when you make a contract with the hospital, and the hospital already knows all this stuff. So when those, like, everyone's fighting with, like, oh, the insurance company, like, they just want to, like, make as much money. The hospital also wants to make as much money, and, like, they have these things already built into, like, their initial contracts with these insurance companies. Like, all that's already done. And the other thing is, like, when you have an insurance company that is talking to these hospitals, they have doctors, like, tons of clinical staff that determine what the right set of care for, like, 90% of patients are. And then you go through from there. So, like, you'll hear stuff where people will say, like, oh, you need a prior auth for that, prior authorization. It's something like, we think that might be valuable, but you have to go through these steps first. And people just lose their mind when that kind of stuff happens. There are, like, I'm not saying, like, it's a perfect system and there are edge cases where these things are bad, but I was just curious how much of, like, a write-up, because I was thinking of doing one either for the sub or for you, like, would be interested, like, how deep you would like to get into that kind of stuff for when you have those conversations.
Probably not at all. I hate talking about healthcare because it's just...
It's That's hard. Fair.
The thing is that, you know, like, the Chesterton's fence post bullshit or whatever, or is it the fence? As I've gotten older and wiser, like, one of the things I've realized is, like, it's very rare that I encounter some complex system and can solve it instantly. Like, I'll see some system, like, when I'm 21, I'm like, oh my God, this is so stupid. You could just remove, like, 80% of this and you'd be so much better. But, like, generally, as you get older, like, you realize, like, okay, like, I know why this exists and I understand why this has to be here and I get why this has to be here. It's like, okay, it's, if you want to change it, you can, but it's a lot harder and it's not quite as straightforward as people think. And I feel like every part of the healthcare process, there's, like, 20 different stupid assumptions built into healthcare related stuff. So, for instance, yes. I fundamentally, genuinely believe that most Americans think that there are enough resources to give everybody, like, top tier healthcare in the United States. I think most Americans genuinely believe that the only reason why everybody isn't getting the best cancer screening, the best treatments, the best everything is just because they don't have money. And there's, like, basically doctors, like, idly sitting by with patients that don't have money to be treated. I think most Americans think that, number one. Number two, I'm not trying to attack a particular person or a particular job class, but doctors, because of their job, they're like emergency services in cities, and that they are unimpeachable. You can never question or attack a doctor's motives. So did you follow the big drama with when the anesthesiologists came out and they were saying that insurance companies are telling us that we can't give our patients enough anesthesia? Did you follow this at all?
Yeah, and I watched with you, and this is one of the things that brought me on that I, like, was infuriating. So they just have no idea.
Yeah, the most compensated doctors in the entire United States were upset because insurance companies felt like, and I think there had actually been evidence that anesthesiologists will kind of, like, overbill insurance companies sometimes, and there were new guidelines that the insurance companies wanted to issue, but these were not guidelines that were like, if your patient is waking up in surgery, good, fuck them. It was just like, we think you guys are probably giving them a little bit too much. You're probably overbilling a bit too much here. Like, let's bring these things in line. But because it's insurance companies versus doctors, insurance companies are always losing in the public eye there because they're just like the devil demons or whatever. And sometimes hospitals will get hit, but people will always be clarifying, like, well, it's the hospital administration, but never doctors, never nurses, never those people ever. Those people are unimpeachable. Even though these guys are compensated sometimes two times as much as competing doctors in other countries, first world countries, Western OECD countries across the planet. Yeah, there's that. And then there's one thing also, there's just so much weird stuff about healthcare. Like, the problem is that, like, if I go in and I want to buy, let's say that I want to go into a restaurant, I want to buy a steak, and I can either get the $90 tomahawk from the best chef on the in the city or whatever, or I can get like a $19 steak from Denny's. Well, if I only have money for the $19 steak, at least I'm still getting a steak. I'll buy the $19 steak. But if I have to choose between the $19 insulin and the $190 insulin, well, me, are you saying that my life, my quality of life is degraded because I don't have enough money? And that creates this weird thing where when the next best thing comes out, now when $400 insulin is out, all the people before that were like, I'm so glad this $190 insulin exists, but if they can't afford the $400 insulin, now they're like, I can't believe this. My life is being destroyed because of capitalism. And it's like, well, the other didn't even exist before. Like, what the f-? These complaints, the subject matter I'm most familiar with is around diabetes and insulin, because it's just so crazy for all how people are just so insane about all that, because healthcare creates a certain amount of entitlement, which I empathize with, obviously, the idea that like this person can't afford like the best thing and it is like directly correlated with their quality of life or sometimes years lived. Like, I'm definitely sympathetic towards that, but it goes back to the thing I said before, where I think most Americans, 50% plus, believe that there are enough resources in the healthcare system to give every single person the top tier quality of care, and that's just not the case. And yeah, but like, there are so many of these assumptions that if you were to push on even one of like five bad assumptions that Americans have on healthcare, like the conversation just completely falls apart immediately, and it's impossible to have any of it.
Yeah, it's just infuriating when some of the people come in and they like talk to you and they don't have like just like an inkling of like how the system actually works, and like they just see like, oh, doctors are like the shining hill or the shining beacon on the hill, and it's, some of these doctors are absolutely terrible people.
Sure.
And they're terrible to work with. But I'll let you go. I was just curious if that's what you wanted. Yeah. If you do get into healthcare stuff,
if you ever want to comment on it, you can always, I'll give you a permit. You can jump in and scream at people. But it's, okay. How old are you?
I'm 38 right now.
Gotcha. Okay. I will say, oh, cool, I'm 37. I used to have a friend that is a Candace Owens lover now, so we're no longer friends. But she used to work on the, what would it be? I think she worked for an insurance company where her job was basically, she would sit at her computer all day, and then she would get, a script would come in from a doctor, and it would have the patient history attached. And generally, it's just her reading through, actually, maybe her job doesn't even exist anymore. Maybe AI does this now. But she would read through everything that's sent, and then she would just have to approve the prescription or whatever. And then I've had friends that are doctors, nurses, every single person I know that works in healthcare hates every other like parallel or like vertical part of healthcare. So everybody I know that's worked in insurance will tell me like doctors will send the most scripts sometimes that they know either we don't support or it's way outside standard of care or they haven't tried these other things yet that they have to first. And then doctors will complain like the insurance company is telling me what to do and I know best because I'm the doctor and these people. And then the hospitals will complain that everything costs too much from the pharmacy. Like every single person in healthcare hates every single other like vertical part of their industry, which is very funny to me too. And yeah, but doctors are the only ones. Yeah,
that's by design. And that's like, they want to put as much friction in between each of those steps for like competitiveness. Sorry.
Arguably. Yeah. Yeah. But it's hard because a lot of that is transparent to us. And it's just, it's not a good industry to feel competitive on because we just have, and again, I sympathize with this. We like, it doesn't feel good to like that you're competitively shopping for your life, you know, like that's just never a good feeling. Or even the idea that like insurance companies have to value life, like literally like the life, like that you might get if you sue somebody for wrongful death or whatever. And that's just a very uncomfortable thing for a lot of people to deal with, especially because in America, we have a very bad, we have a very bad relationship with death, especially.
Well, that's one of those things that like Obamacare was trying to solve, like with the like STARS measures versus fee for service, which is another part of healthcare that people don't understand. Is a lot of people, especially in Medicaid, get assigned for like a healthcare provider will just get X amount of money a year to take care of you, and it's their job to do the best that they can, like for that. And the better ratings they are, that kind of stuff, it gets really in depth. But like, those are the different kind of like models and stuff that are set up, and like, it's just, I don't know, it drives me crazy when people jump in. And yeah, I apologize, but that's all I wanted to say.
All right,
thank you very much for your time.
Be careful, bud.
Bye.
Flame Z, go ahead, what's your question?
I was wondering if you would ever be interested in covering different countries' politics.
I mean,
you just did the UK recently. Would you ever do like Canada, since Muta's there?
What I mean, I don't know, not that much, maybe. Like, what about, I mean, I live in my country. I barely cover my own country's politics enough. What would I cover? I mean, if there's big stuff going on, sometimes I'll cover it a little bit, but.
Yeah, it's like recently there was the big Carney speech that was slightly covered.
What, the Davos one?
Yeah. And that was a great, that was a good speech. Kind of sets the mood of the world also.
Yeah. I mean, we watched it, I think, right? And we talked about it a little. Yeah. But I mean, there's not much to say. I mean, I agree with most of what he says. Yeah. The problem is, like, these are interesting conversations to have where there are two sides to the conversation, but there's not really another side right now because the right is just so... Like, the most interesting point that he brought up in that speech, which is really true, is the idea that the rules-based international order that everybody had to subscribe to was a bit of a fiction because the U.S. doesn't really, and we kind of hope the U.S. keeps itself accountable. But we've seen, like, the explosion of that system, especially recently, where we realize the U.S. original powers definitely don't adhere to the same rules-based international order that everybody else was adhering to. So it was a bit of a fiction, and now it's been completely blasted as a fiction, so they need to figure out, like, a way forward from there. Like, these are interesting concepts, but there's nobody in politics to talk about any of this shit now with, because everybody's Ivan Trump.
Oh, okay, so you would want somebody to do a back and forth with.
Well, I'm sorry, when I say somebody, I don't mean, like, a person to argue with or debate personally. I mean, like, another political, like, a political opposition to argue with. Like, in MAGA, MAGA is a deeply unserious movement that is plagued with bad intellectual with people that should have been out of society because of how they are. Well, I feel the same way with reform in the UK right now. I don't know if I felt as harshly about Pierre Olivier or whatever. I remember hearing him a few times.
Like,
whatever the
he
fuck.
He switched his name to get more votes that pronounce it French.
Sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. The whole populist shit is just so... Populism is just, like, such a brain rot. It's, like, such an obvious, like, bad guy narrative in any movie, media, history, everything. But I don't know how many people follow this shit, whatever.
I mean, one of the only good things Trump's ever done is actually influence the Canadian to have Carney
true,
win.
True.
Yeah, that was a nice result I got to live through. Yeah. Okay. No, it was mainly that, since Canada's being a bit more in the spotlight recently. I know it's hard and a bit boring to look at, but... Sometimes the Canadian part of politics, if ever you want to have fun, there's, like, compilation of, like, not debates, but how they scream at each other, how our prime ministers scream at each other during parliament sessions.
In Canada?
It's fun to fuck. Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, nobody cares.
It's like the UK system.
Yeah. It's televised, but nobody cares about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Good cue.
Have fun.
Put it all in red. What's your question?
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks a lot for getting me in here.
Don't forget, first 30 seconds, you got to ask the question. Go ahead.
Uh-oh. Yeah, sure. I have a very small setup. So I've been a member of a debate club at my university for quite some time. And because of the setting, because it's a university, afterwards, we often chat with students on different topics that are more today lives related rather than, like, vacuum questions about debating stuff. And as I'm interested in finance, the conversation is sometimes driven towards that because that's the topics I'm interested in. And I find myself in conversations with people that a lot of them are actually anti-free trade activity. Like, I sometimes hear narratives that the stock market is evil, you know, the rich billionaires are evil, stuff like that.
Question
and,
done.
And why do you think people in university are left-leaning?
I don't know. Why do you ask me the biggest questions in all of...
Go ahead, Steve. Why?
But it's probably a combination of being young, and so you don't have much experience with the world, so it's very easy for you to feel radicalized in one direction or the other. And then, especially as a younger person, if you think about how people engage with money through their life. Your worst engagement with money is generally going to be at the beginning of your life, and the best position you're going to have for money is going to be right before your final descent into death at the end of your life, right? You're accumulating debt early in your life for education, maybe for a house, and your earnings are the lowest they ever will be at the beginning of your life before you've ramped up into your career. So, like, people in the earliest part of their lives are going to feel fucked over by money systems more than, and they don't have any positive engagement with them. Like, what positive engagement does a 19 or 20 year old have with the stock market? Nothing, right? And then as you get later on in life, your engagement and interactions with the world change. That'd be my guess for why. Yeah.
But that's the thing. Wouldn't you then think that as you get more exposed to money and mechanisms of working with it, you get more with money over time, right? Like, people get themselves in credit card debt, people, like, take out mortgages and get by, like, overdraft fees, stuff like that. And then, like, I would, like, with this logic, I would think that people get more leaning, left-leaning over time. But the trajectory is the opposite, right?
The trajectory is absolutely the opposite. I mean, if I told you that most guys were taller than most girls, do you think that's true?
Sure. Okay. I see.
Wealth is absolutely. I don't think I've seen a graph, but I would bet my balls on it that, like, if you were to graph the wealth of an average person over time, it's increasing as time goes on. That older people are definitely wealthier than younger people on average. Like, that's just a general ascent that people make through their life, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, but wouldn't you even think that, like, me explaining potentially that, you know, the free trade activities and the public traded funds enabled, you know, a company with funding to come to their city, create jobs, create businesses, like, why is that not enough convincing argument for a relatively educated student, right? Like, I'm not talking about your average person, kind of, you know, like, just getting their education, being sold in a pipeline that they guaranteed to get a job, but it's rather like a certain set of people who are willing to engage in a political discussion because they attend a debate club, but still are rather thinking that, yeah, like, all of those anti-rich billionaire narratives are like absolutely true.
Well, I mean, it's easy to see. Like when wealthy people are winning, like they're just very visible. And sometimes it feels bad if you have feelings that in society the average person isn't doing well enough, and then somebody comes in to set up some new business. Even if there are winners there from people getting jobs, it feels like the most of the winning is going to the guy who's setting up the company, and that always is going to feel bad, right? It's like a concentrated winner thing.
I then have a very small question. In the context of a free trade conversation, do you think Polymarket is evil?
I think Polymarket is evil.
What do you mean by evil?
Not necessarily, but it has the potential to be. Well, some people think it's bad because the predicting on bad outcomes just feels bad. So, like, do we want to have a like prediction morally? Market for somebody dying? And then, obviously, there are people that can abuse the fuck out of it. I think we all agree that the abuses that might happen are bad. But is that what you mean? Like, predicting bad events is like a thing, or...
Yeah, I mean, in a certain sense, right? Like, some people would argue that it enables gambling. Some would say that, you know, average Joe gets stopped by the insider trader on the Iran invasion or stuff like that. I'm curious what you think, because I don't think...
I mean, I don't think that anybody gets fucked up by it. Like, or why would you get fucked up by the Iran invasion? Just that people are betting on outcomes that might be bad to you, or...
I mean, you take a side of the bet, right? Not knowing the true probability of the event, and then get fucked up because the insider trades knowing the better probability.
30 seconds.
Sure. I mean, there's going to be insider trading for... Well, everything. Not for everything, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a strong opinion on it. I guess I just don't engage with it much. But it seems like a thing that would be impossible to prevent abuses of. Yeah, like when you have like how many times? Weren't there there were Polymarkets on whether or not like Elon Musk would tweet like 100 times in a week or some bullshit, or like in 2 days or something, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why you'd be allowed to run bets like that, since it seems like very easy for a friend of Elon to be like, "Hey, bro, I'm going to make like $200,000. Can you just like not tweet or something?" Like,
yep. All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Can I say one last sentence?
Go.
One sentence.
I really appreciate that the London debate. Can we have more events in Europe? Thank you.
I'll think about it. Bye.
Parsec, emote god. Go ahead. You know, you didn't need a sub. You could have just asked me and I would have dragged you up.
Nah.
Never mind.
Thank you. So I sent you a 50,000 word email.
I read all of it. Don't worry.
Thank you. Okay. So I wanted to talk about democracy. Where are you at these days on like the radicalization of young people?
I don't think about it much. I don't know. I just don't think about it too much. I mean, I think it's bad. But the thing that I'm more concerned about right now is the radicalization of old people. Like, I feel like young people get radicalized. Like, that's kind of like throughout all of history, young people just are so prone to radicalization for a million different reasons, mainly just because of lack of life experience. But I get more concerned when older people are getting radicalized by stuff like online than I think younger people were. It's a little bit kind of my expectation. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. When I look at it for like young people, I think the conversation tends to kind of hover around like who they're being influenced by. So like you'll get people being radicalized by certain media figures, and then it's oftentimes that like the media figures are the people that you're kind of looking to. But I'd like to kind of make the argument that I don't know if democracy really does a good enough job of like selling itself these days. Just it doesn't really, like, we kind of treat it as like a solved system, and I don't know if we can do that anymore, just with the amount of people that are kind of straying away from it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, I always advocate for, like, I think it sucks that we kind of like stopped defending liberalism with positive arguments. This is kind of my whole foray into politics in like 2016, was the idea that liberals or people on the left never seem to want to debate or defend their ideas. I thought that was really bad, because then people lost the ability to do it. Yeah,
yeah, not even just the ideas, but like the concept of the system itself, because right now there's like a huge, I guess, vacuum in the democratic system right now that can be like exploited or kind of filled by the illiberal types, and that's both like lefty and fash. So like you're kind of fighting two battles at once with that. So I don't know, pragmatically I'd like to see a bit of a bigger push from like democratic pundits, hopefully, to kind of reinforce the reasons why democracy is so important for like a super healthy nation.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, good job. Do you have any final thoughts or words of hope and aspiration for us, Mooten? That's what you sound like.
Yeah, I got one. Obamna.
That was freaking epic, dude.